share two or three ideas that Rav Amital would speak about. These were two of the five or six legendary sichot. You want to make up? Oh, thank you. Thank you. You want to make a list of the top sichot that we waited for. It was the first day of yeshiva, entering the Beis Medrash. I talked to you about that last time. Rav Amital trying to ease our entry, help us understand this was a different world. We shouldn't be afraid. We shouldn't be afraid to fail. We shouldn't be afraid to be afraid. Obviously, the Slichos night, when Rav Amital spoke about HaKadosh Baruch Hu covering his head like a talis, and those symbols and icons of HaKadosh Baruch Hu davening with us. And then, of course, the two Sichot on Rosh Hashanah. The first day, he would speak about HaKadosh Baruch Hu's presence in our world. A little bit of the tone of what I spoke about last night, that it's on us and it's our responsibility to battle, struggle, to advance Hashem in this world. Then the second day, about the shofar and about Akedas Yitzchak. That was the minhag. The first day spoke about Malchus Hashem. Second day about Am Yisrael. Inevitably be a lot of crying and tears. And of course, he would daven. He'd be the Shliach Tzibur. It was just a magical experience. I want to take you back to some of those ideas that he expressed. Just three or four themes. One theme that he constantly returned to is, and I'm using some of my own words, the ideas are his, some of my words, some of my extensions and applications, the switch from words to voice. The switch from speaking to the sound of a shofar. And what are we trying to accomplish with the sound of the shofar? And he quoted the strange Gemara in Rosh Hashanah on Daf Lamed Gimel. Everyone knows the Gemara. Everyone knows that when the Torah says teruah, we don't really know what it is. But we try to decode what a true is based on the sobbing of whom? Who knows who's sobbing? We take as a paradigm. Sister's mother. Why in the world would we be patterning our sounds of a shofar after the Yavavos? Yavavos is an Aramaic word for what we call trua, not shvarim. Vatiyabev eim sisra, which is the language of the pasuk in Shoftim. Why would we pattern it after a mother, a Midianite officer? You think Rachel, Rivka, Sarah, something. And Rav Amital said, because sisra's mother is just a mother. And she's expecting her son to come home. And she's shocked when she sees a coffin or when she sees the procession moving along without her son in view. And she starts panicking and wailing and heaving and weeping and panting. And we're just trying to capture the most natural, native, pure voice possible. We're trying to get to that point of internal purity without any pretense, without any artifice, without any sophistication. Just to look inside of ourselves and find... Ellen, and fine, and tell me it's over. Push, just push it. Push. Thank you. And just find that inner pure voice. And to help us navigate to that voice, we dafka have to quote someone who was in a tzaddik or is in a righteous person. But it's just a mother. A sister maybe was a criminal. A sister's mother was just a mother. And she was panic struck. She was traumatized that her son isn't returning. And we're trying to get rid of some of that artifice on Rosh Hashanah. There's a very, very powerful Mishnah in Maseches Smachos that Rav Amital would always quote. And it shows Rav Amital's penchant for understanding Gemara's, not just in the literal sense, because that makes sense literally, but also metaphorically. When a person dies, there's some scene the Mishnah describes where Malach comes and starts hitting the grave. And at that point, that the person is awakened, and the Malach says, "What's your name?" The person says, "I don't know, what's my name? I forgot my name." I can imagine forgetting a lot of things. I forget a lot of things in life. It's hard for me to imagine forgetting my name. But the experience and the fear and the intimidation of Yom HaDin after death is so overpowering that you can basically lose even your name. That's why the Shalah says people have a minhag to recite a pasuk whose first letter corresponds to the first letter of your name, and whose last letter corresponds to the last letter. In any sitter, you can find the list of psukim. So my name is Moshe, so my pasuk is in Mishlei. Machashavos be'etza tikon uvetacha belos asei milchama. Mem hei, it starts with, which is an interesting comment onto its own. You'll forget your name, but you remember the pasuk. Something deep about Tari. You forget your name, but pasuk I won't forget. That will stick. And Rav Amital felt it's not just forgetting your name. All of a sudden, some shock and you forget your name. But so much of our life, we forge our identity based on externals and artificials, and I am doctor, and I am rabbi, and I am what this world sees me as, and the masks I wear, and then you die, and it all fades. It's all pointless. and your titles dissolve, and you no longer have your family, you certainly don't have your money, you don't have any pretense, and then you're naked. I told you, I felt this way over the summer, I had surgery. And slowly but surely, everything I was denuded, everything I was divested, and I was just lying there like a fish on an operating table without any clothing, no family, my wife was, it was just me. And okay, my surgeons, I trusted my surgeons, Baruch Hashem, but I've never had that, haven't had that feeling in a while where where you live and everyone's around you, your family, your friends, your rebbein, your social settings, everything you have, it will be taken away. And when we die, it's all fades. And then we have to wake up and say, well, do I have an identity that's independent of title and independent of artificial convention or independent of what I've acquired? But that's, at Rosh Hashanah, we're trying to find that. There's a medrash that says, L'David Hashem Ori V'Yishi Mimi'ira. Ori Zer Rosh Hashanah Yishi Zer Yom Kippur. And Rav Amital spoke about this a lot, that until the light of HaKadosh Baruch Hu enters in Rosh Hashanah, you're not honest enough to perform tshuva. Yom Kippur is the day of tshuva. Rosh Hashanah is very, very different from tshuva, distant from tshuva. We don't say al chetz, we don't clap al shamnus. There's very few slichos. There's nothing about tshuva per se. There are a couple references. But Rosh Hashanah is the lead-in, the radiance, the light of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the presence of Melech Ma, things that matter, things that are eternal, shine into your heart. And your soul has to become a little more honest because you're facing reality, not fiction, the narratives that we script all our lives. Now there's a reality that we're facing. And then that light orienters, now I can perform tshuva and solicit yishi. Hashem HaKadosh Baruch Hu should save me and rescue me. So, David Hashem, ori, zeh Rosh Hashanah, the yishi, zeh Yom Kippur. So it's that simplicity, that purity that we're trying to find, and the symbol of shifting from words to a sound, or shifting from tefillos to sister's mother's cry, or shifting from human speech to an animal cry. These are all parallel. Us shifting to Sisra, words shifting to sounds, human speech shifting to bestial animal shrieks. They all symbolize a search for something more primitive, more native, more pure, and more simple. And Rav Amital quoted several halachos to indicate this. It wasn't just, and this sounds very Rav Lichtenstein-like, because Rav Lichtenstein's pivot was always halachos. We'd always quote halachos and then superimpose them on machshavin in the way that the Rav does. Rav Amital didn't have to, but here quoted a lot of interesting halachos. So for example, the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah says on Chavzayin that if you put a shofar within a shofar, let's say you thrust one shofar into another shofar. So it's a fascinating Gemara when you see it through the lenses of Rav Amital. Anyone know the Gemara? Im kol ha-pinimi shama yatsa. If you hear the internal shofar, you yatsa. If the sound is being thrust through the outer shofar and ricocheting between those two shofaros, the outer shofar and the inner shofar, that's puzzle. But if the inner shofar, then you're yatsa, which has halachic meaning. But from our perspective, from Abdel's perspective, you're trying to find the kol ha-pinimi, the internal voice, not the kol ha-chitzoni. There's an internal voice, and the entire year that voice gets cloaked by an external voice, the sounds in our world, the way we see ourselves vis-a-vis the way the world sees us. In Rosh Hashanah, we're looking for the kol ha-pinimi, we're looking for that inner voice. Or, the Gemara says, same Gemara, if you coat the inner part of the shofar with gold, tzipa mi bifnim, im nishtana kolo michamos shahaya pasal. If the internal gold coating alters the fabric or the texture of the sound, you're not yotze. But if the gold coating doesn't affect it, you still have that authentic, pure sound, even with all the gold in our world, not just gold meaning money, but the decorations and the layers that we add to what we're born with primitively and naturally. So can you find that voice inside of you that's pure, that's honest, that's candid, that's self-reflective, that doesn't take all these coping mechanisms that we have to throw into our mirror, almost like our mirrors have become USB. You have to download narratives onto our mirror and then just looking in the mirror and seeing what we see and seeing who we are and acknowledging who we are and facing who we are. And Rosh Hashanah is a day of mirrors, to look at the mirror without that veneer or without that other movie playing on the mirror. The Gemara says, at least according to the Mishnah, when Chavav Mebeis, Shofar Shel Rosh Hashanah Shel Ya'el Pashut. It should be as ours are. It should be a ram's horn that's straight rather than a spiral horn. So at least Ashkenaz and Paskin should be a straight shofar. The Gemara quotes Dales that argues, Machlokas Tanayim, but the Gemara says, why on Rosh Hashanah, according to the Mishnah, Chavav Mebeis, should it be a Ya'el Pashut? So what does the Gemara say? You know, it's the Lashon of the Gemara? Rosh Hashanah, Kamet de Pashut Inish Maili Tvei. If your tefillah is more simple tefillah, straight, frontal, undorned, no, then it'll be more successful. So it's a tefillah pshuta. And Rav Amital would always quote a French 13th century Rishon who said that when he davens, he tries to daven like a baby. Because the baby just cries, and the baby, the primitive cry, rather than the discourse. And so much of Rosh Hashanah is sophisticated. Remember I spoke about yesterday, converting Yom HaZikaron from a frightening experience into a favorable one, which you've got all these images that we conjure and all these events that we invoke. But part of it, and that's what makes the day so contrasting, should it be a primitive tefillah? Should it be a sophisticated? She have kavanah, she just cried out Kodesh Baruch Hu. And at some point you'll realize in life there's always going to be contrast when you face religion, because you can't capture religion in one tonality or one frequency. And part of Rosh Hashanah is davening a little bit simpler. Rav Amital would quote the first davening in Jewish history. What was the first davening in Jewish history? And in fact, we say Pesach night, and we, a little bit historically revisionist. Why? Vayamas melech Mitzrayim, vayayanchu b'nei Yisrael min ha'avoda, v'atal shavasam el ha'lokin. I don't see tefillah in this pasuk. I see someone dying, a despot dying, increasing the workload in the wake of his death, the Jewish people groaning and moaning because of the burden, and their groans and moans ascending to heaven. But yet in Pesach night, what do we say? Vayaris Hashem esanyenu v'esem alech, v'yishma Hashem eskolenu zu tefillah seinu shenemar. We didn't really daven, we were moaning. But in that moaning is a more pure. Because when I decide to daven, I'm collecting my thoughts are a little bit confused and distracted. When I'm suffering, it's a shriek. I'm just crying to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, help me. I need your help. So it's much more primitive, and therefore more pure than the more sophisticated forms of tefillah. That was one general message which Rav Amital delivered. And as a segue, let me quote a Gemara in Yevamos, which segues between this message and another message. The Gemara in Yevamos quotes a debate among certain Amoraim, how they like to daven. Do anyone have a Rambam here by any chance? Anyone has a Rambam? Okay. There's someone who can look up the Rambam Hilchos Teshuvah Perek Gimel and have it ready. I'm going to want to quote a Rambam at some point. But anyway, we're in Yevamos now, Kufei Amud Beis. We're in Yevamos, Kufei Amud Beis, quotes this discussion, and it says, Rav Shimon, Rav Yossi, Rav Chaim, Rav Shimon, Bar Rabbi. These were two of Rebbe's Talmidim. Rebbe Chia was Rebbe's Talmud. Rebbe Shimon was Rebbe's son. They were sitting. You smile. You've seen this Gemara before? Someone quoted the Gemara? They were sitting near Rebbe's house. They're having a conversation. They weren't talking about the sports. They're talking about davening. And one said, HaMispalel Tzarech Shitin Einav Lamata. How do you daven? So I'm a little bit leery of asking that question. Because I think the more that you try to impose posture and eye motion and standing on davening, the less spontaneous it is. If you look at the Mishnah Berurah, you should daven like this, with your hands folded, your hands behind your back, and obviously there's some submission that this conveys, but there's so many different emotions in davening and so many different phases to start to hold your hands this way, not that way, in shape. Obviously, you shouldn't be outlandish, you shouldn't be dancing, you shouldn't be doing headstands when you daven. But within reason, I think many different postures capture many different phases of our davening. Sometimes I feel I want to daven as straight as possible and not move. Sometimes I feel like the movement helps me. And sometimes I stand like this. You see people daven with their arms outstretched, HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Believe me, your grandfathers would have a heart attack if they saw it. They saw people davening with their hands flaying at HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They would be traumatized. You don't raise your hands to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. In Eretz Yisrael today, it's a little more accepted because of the intimacy people feel with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So Rebbe or Rabbi Shimon or Rabbi Chia said you should look at the ground. What's the pasuk in Melachim Aleph? Now, why should you look at the ground? So Rav Amital felt that this was not to be taken literally. It doesn't say yitain einav bekarka. The language of the Gemara is yitain einav lemata. What does lemata mean? If I'm standing and I put my eyes, instead of looking this way, I look down, I'm looking at my heart. I'm trying to find an inner voice. I'm trying to find something inside of myself rather than something beyond myself or something extrinsic. And that's how Rav Amital explained this Gemara, in line with all the other messages, in line with the shofar within the shofar, in line with the shofar coated with gold, in line with the straight shofar. However, Rashi has a different shot. Rashi says, Einav Lamata means literally, you should put your eyes to the ground. Why should you put your eyes to the ground? So I would have said it's a sign of humility. That's not what Rashi is. Again, the simple pshat of the Gemara is Rashi's. Put your eyes to the ground. Rav Amital felt you could read the Gemara differently, not putting your eyes to the ground, putting your eyes lamata internally. But Rashi says ground. Why is ground important? Rashi says, klape eretz Yisrael, mishum deshchin hasam. You should look at the ground because, oh my goodness, I'm looking at this ground. If I just follow this dirt a little further, I'll get to Israel. Maybe in Brooklyn, but maybe in London, but this ground is attached to the ground. The air is different, but the ground is all attached. So I'm looking at the ground, I'm tracing my way back. Rav Amital felt that you could offer a different shot in Rashi. You're not just tracing yourself back to Eretz Yisrael because it's the Shechina. You're tracing yourself back to the Beis HaMikdash, and listen carefully, it's a very, very subtle point. Part of the place you want to be in on Rosh Hashanah is to lose yourself amongst the collective. Here's a common theme alert. You're standing in front of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and finally that light comes in, and finally the film over the mirror is taken down, removed, and you're seeing yourself, and you realize, oh my goodness, I don't have any right to daven for anything. Now, what's your safety hatch? Where do you run to? So one place you run to is what I said before. Primitive, simple, pashtus, I'm crying to you, help me. I'm like an animal, I'm a child, just help me, I'm your creature. Another place you run to is, I'm not here by myself. I'm here with my people. Don't look at me, Hashem. Don't shine the spotlight on me, you see? Hold the guy next to me here. I'm hiding, the opposite of a photobomb. I'm hiding behind the guy next to me. I'm trying to make it humorous. And this stems from a Zohar. The Zohar rewrites a conversation between Elisha and his Shunammite host. In Melachim, Elisha finds this great, great hostess who rebuilds her entire attic for the visiting rabbi. That rebuilds the entire attic and is so overwhelming and so kind. And he looks at her and he says, you've made all these changes. Hayesh ledaber lach el hamelach? Should I speak to the king and get you some favors? And she says, B'toch ami anuchi yosheves, I'm good. I have what I need. That's the literal conversation. But the Zohar says, this is taking place on Rosh Hashanah. It just happens to be Elisha is traveling on Rosh Hashanah, and he's staying with the Isha Shunamis in Rosh Hashanah. And when he asks her, Hayesh ledaber lach el hamelach, he's not asking, should I ask the local king for favors? He's asking, should I daven HaKadosh Baruch Hu for you? Should I say, oh, the Isha Shunamis, she has such great merits. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, judge her favorably. And she says, B'toch ami anuchi yosheves. On Rosh Hashanah, I just want to mold into the background. I just want to be part of ami. I just want to B'toch ami anuchi yosheves. I'm just part. I'm a normal person. I'm a normal woman. I don't want to stand out. The second I start standing out, I get my own dossier and my own spotlight. Who knows where this is going? I'd rather just be taken with everyone else. Quoting from a different sicha that Rav Amital gave, and it's an important Gemara, the Gemara interprets the famous Mishnah. The Mishnah says, V'chol b'nei Adam ya'avrun lefonecha kivnei marom. And we quote this in the Sanat Tokef. What does that mean? Everyone passes kivnei marom. So you probably know the most famous pshat. What's the most famous pshat kivnei marom? Anyone?
Sheep.
Imrana means sheep. However, the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah provides two other answers. One answer is Imrana are the soldiers of David's army, which creates the tension of maybe not returning, that this is life and death. That's what's conveyed, that we all pass by you like soldiers. It also conveys the sense that we're soldiers for the purpose I spoke of yesterday. We have an agenda. We're not soldiers in a violent way, in a militaristic way, but we're soldiers that have an agenda, that are serving some higher order, some higher mission. The third pshat is not soldiers or sheep, but there was a village located on a very steep mountain called Maron, B'nai Maron. Some want to say that they've traced it to certain villages, Beit Charon possibly, near Yerushalayim. And to get up to that village, you had to walk up a very steep rampart. And to walk up that steep rampart, you had to go one by one, single file. There wasn't enough width for people to walk side by side. So the steeple walk, or the steep walk up, is contrasted with the sheep, because on the one end, we appear in front of HaKadosh Baruch Hu one by one. We each walk up. We walk up to that hill, one by one. On the other hand, we appear in front of HaKadosh Baruch Hu like sheep. Sheep are always herded together. There's no shepherd for one sheep. It's a herd. And the shepherd worries about the herd. So we're trying to remind ourselves, on the one hand, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is staring right at us. On the other hand, we're trying to say, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it's not about me. And I could find identity and hope by losing my own self in a larger collective experience of Rosh Hashanah. And that's why Rav Amital felt, when you look at the ground in general, but certainly on Rosh Hashanah, you're trying to trace yourself back to a place of collective identity and submergence of self within a broader communal reality of Beis HaMikdash. Beis HaMikdash, no one stood out. Beis HaMikdash, you've got millions of people standing side by side. Hustle, bustle. There's no one person. Kohen Gadol obviously stood out, but most people are just lost in this mass of humanity. So we're trying to lose ourselves in the mass of humanity. That's another tone to think about in Rosh Hashanah. One tone to think about in Rosh Hashanah is primitive and pure and simple. Another tone is collective and national rather than personal and egocentric. Third message, just want to make sure we aren't overshooting, and we have another 10 minutes. Third message, I think it's very, very very typical of Rav Amital. If you look at the sequence of psukim, and I alluded to this last night, I didn't have enough time to speak about it, and not just the sequence of psukim, but the rhythm of the, or the musical nature of the sounds, you'll find brackets. Namely, tkia, shvarim, shvarim, terua, terua, and then a tkia. So you've got a straight sound before, broken sounds in the middle, straight sounds towards the end. Straight sounds are perfect. In fact, just to warn you in advance, the yeshiva based on Rav Lichtenstein's Minhagim, Rav Lichtenstein was a real stickler for tkias ha-shofar. First of all, I know I'm bleeding over to Rav Lichtenstein a little bit. We all thought that when Rav Lichtenstein was the makri, because he used to say, tkia shofar, we thought we didn't even need shofar. Like he had so much kavani. I hear this with Rav Moshe a little bit. He screams out in just tkia, like to inform. He would scream out and chant. We thought that Rav Aaron's tkia was even more powerful than. Part of what made us, he was extremely, extremely careful about the tkia. The tkia had to be straight without an intro or without a conclusion. It's very hard to do it. You'll hear Rabik does it very nicely. They're very soft sounds, but many, many tekios, and of course, most of the time during El, we're not really makbid, many tekios, where there's a punctuated start and a beginning. And if everyone's very makbid, the tekios should be straight, without a start, without an end. Do, 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 round, do, do, where there's a do, where there's an entry point and an exit point. And if everyone's also very makbid, that even if you flub the final tekia, you'd have to go back and do the entire set. So you'd have a tekia, shvarim, teruah, tekia, and the last part of the tekia would end like the hoo, and it would all be in the finger. We'd all, 700 people, we're looking at Rav Aaron's index finger. We'd go like this, uh-oh. And Baruch Hashem, Rav Vick is a fantastic bal tekia, but I remember years which it lasted fairly long. Rav Aaron actually had a clock. He had a little timer, because he wanted to time the length of the tekia. And we're all looking at that finger. Oh, no, finger, the index finger. So he'll say, what
was the minimum time?
We ended it. Oh, it was minimum time. I don't know. No one. I was just looking at the finger. I was looking at the time. I was looking at the finger. Anyway, so it's straight. It's perfect. It's unabridged. It's non-introduced. Doesn't end. The middle is broken. It's a human voice. And if you follow the rhythm in the psukim of shofaris, you'll see that as well. I alluded to it last night. The first three psukim of shofaris talk about Har Sinai when Hashem blew the shofar. And the last three psukim of shofaris talk about Yemos HaMashiach, when Hashem will blow the shofar. But the middle three psukim of shofaris talk about when humans blow the shofar. Tiku b'chodesh shofar b'kesayim chagena, we're blowing it on Rosh Hashanah. Hallelu b'tziltzilei shama. Hallelu b'tziltzilei trua. Kol hanashama. So when they blew it in the Beis HaMikdash as part of the musical ensemble. So there's a contrast between the perfection of HaKadosh Baruch Hu and the imperfection of human beings. And let me tell you what Rav Amital would say on Yom Kippur during the Ilah, just to help you frame this better. Rav Amital would be standing there most of the time crying and tearing. And he'd say, Karav Hashem l'chol karav l'chol ashe yeku'u ve'emes. And who in this world could be emes? And if HaKadosh Baruch Hu only answers the tefillos that are emes, what hope do we have? Because we're all full of falsehood and deceit and deception. Now, most people would finish that sicha and say, but now it's Yom Kippur and you've been purged and you're clean and you're tar. Climb up the mountain, be honest, and Hashem will accept your tefillos. But that itself is dishonest, because even on Yom Kippur, we're not as honest as HaKadosh Baruch Hu is. Can anyone take that right and arrogate the right of emes? So Rav Amital would say, we're not b'nei emes. But there's another pasuk, and that's how you should daven. He says, Karav Hashem l'nishbrei leiv. Even if you're not emes, Karav Hashem l'nishbrei leiv, and think about Jewish history, and think about the Holocaust, and think about the soldiers that died leaving this building on Yom Kippur. Karav Hashem l'nishbrei leiv. Rav Amital allowed us to be human. He allowed us to accept our human limitations. He allowed us, in fact, he expected us to use it as part of religious consolation. As hard as we try, we're humans. And as hard as we try, we fail. As hard as we try, we're flawed. And just accept that about yourself. Accept that your sound won't be the tekiah. Kadosh Baruch Hu's sound is the tekiah. Kadosh Baruch Hu, our sound, are human beings crying. Moshe, you have the... If you read the Rambam, the Ramital, the fantastic way, thank you, to read the Rambam, Perek Gimel, Halacha, Beis. The Rambam says a person has more zechuyos, or if he has more avonos, he dies immediately, more zechuyos. The Rambam goes through the calculation of zechuyos and avonos. But he says, don't just look at them quantitatively. There are some mitzvot that have greater weight and some averos that have greater weight. And the Rambam concludes, this is Perek Gimel Lechabez, the Ein Shoklin, you can't calculate, don't think you can calculate, Ela B'daitel Shel Kel Deos. Only the Kodesh Baruch Hu has the calculus for Chet Mitzvahs and Averus. For Hu HaYodea, and he knows, Heich Orchim HaZechuyos Kenegin HaVonos. The Kodesh Baruch Hu has the calculus and the algorithms, we don't. So we think that means there could be certain mitzvahs that are more severe, we just don't know about them, and less severe, we just fulfill as much as we can, and we leave it to Hashem's calculus. Rami Tafel, no, Kodesh Baruch Hu is also, Shokel means he takes into account how hard it is to be a human being, how frustrating sometimes it is, and how we're broken in life by things beyond our control. And sometimes when we're broken, we're more apt to sin. So Kodesh Baruch Hu doesn't take our sin without a context. He contextualizes our sin. He says, oh, I saw a boy in yeshiva a couple days ago, not a boy in this room. And two or three times I saw him, and there was types of behavior that really got me disappointed. I'm really upset. I told my wife about it. I saw this thing, and there's like a trend here. And then I went to one of his rebbeim, and he gave me a little background. And the little background that I got, that boy's a hero. Knowing what he's been through, and knowing his arc, and where he's heading. And okay, so it's understandable. So now everyone has the same arc, and everyone has the same context. And it comes back, and doesn't say, how many chataim, how many mitzvot, says, these are human beings, these aren't malachim, these aren't computers. I can judge a computer based on output and processing speed. Human beings have different pressures in life and stressors in life and backgrounds, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu is shokel that, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu takes it into account. Rav Amitai would always quote, well, this will probably end the Maharal. Why is Rachel's tefillah so successful? So the Maharal says an incredible thing. It's just an incredible Maharal. He says, Rachel, her life wasn't perfect. She took her sister into her home willingly. And then when that wasn't enough, she had to take a birthing servant. And then the second birthing servant came in, the second shifcha. So Rachel knew that life isn't perfect, more than anyone. And then she dies prematurely while she's giving birth to her long-awaited son, second son. So when Rachel davens to Hashem, she says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I lived a human life. I lived a life that wasn't so perfect. And my children are also going through stressors. So take it into account when you think about their mitzvahs and their chataim, and don't judge them too harshly or too absolutely. These were the three messages which Rav Amital delivered. One is the sound of the shofar, primitive, simple, pure, primal, sister's mother, maternal mercy, maternal love. Your mother loves you, trust me, no matter what you do, she'll love you. I know it sounds ridiculous, but in some cases, even more, just teasing, your mother loves you. Number two, collective identity. Look at the ground. Don't stand out. Don't stick out. Try to find out, especially here in Eretz Yisrael. Think of all the soldiers who are on army bases and the schus you have to be in yeshiva. Think of all the people in Israel that don't know how to daven properly in Rosh Hashanah. They wish they could and they're yearning for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but they don't really know what the shofar means and they're not preparing as you are. Just see some of the soldiers who have been here the last couple of days. Many of them have had a day off. Many of them are English speakers. Had a day off, they're running right back to the army. They're not going to have the same relaxed feeling. They're going to be running around in jeeps and protecting us. And it's easier, I think, in Israel to break out of the internal, self-absorbed reality and to connect to something larger and broader. And think about when you say, Ezo, Lacherev Ezel LaShalom Be'al Hamadinos Bo'i Omer Ezel Lacherev Ezel LaShalom Ezel LaSova Ezel Rav Ezelva. These are real issues. They're going to affect our people. You think everyone who died last year, there's some terrible piguim in Eretz Yisrael, you think everyone who died deserved to die? Evidently, HaKadosh Baruch Hu takes korbanos. HaKadosh Baruch Hu takes korbanos from our people. And it's not as if, oh, that person deserved. We don't know what HaKadosh Baruch Hu's cheshbonos are. So we're all in this together in a way that we're not. I mean, Baruch Hashem, not Baruch Hashem, but in a way we've seen that wherever Jews are, we're in this together. You can be in San Diego, you can be in Pittsburgh, you can be in Hendon. We're all in this together, obviously. I don't say this in a morbid way, but that sense, oh, I'm on the sidelines. That's what a Jew is. A Jew, you're never on the sidelines of history. You're always front row of history. You're always challenging history forward. And that's who we are as Jews, and that's our pride. But certainly now living in Eretz Yisrael, it's a little easier to remember that because it's right here. So just look outside. Then the third voice is the voice of it's all right to be limited as a human being. It's all right to forgive yourself for having flaws. It's all right to forgive yourself for having a broken voice. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the only one that has that perfect voice. Har Sinai was a perfect voice. Moshe, we're living in a world of imperfection. We try to perfect it. I used to have this line when people would ask me, I put up a nice post on Facebook if you want to look at me. I'll just tell you the tone of the Facebook, that there's so much rancor now in the political arena because Bibi and Gantz can't find a way to share power. And it struck me today, like, we saw miracles. For 40-plus years, we saw two great people living in such harmony and such unison, and we learned so much from that. They didn't have to say a word, just seeing people without ego, seeing people who appreciated talent in other people. Most institutions are capped by the talent level of the head. You're not going to, if you're the head of the institution, you're not going to bring someone better than you, so you become the top gun, and then you create a cap. And Rav Avital brought Rav Aaron to the yeshiva, and the yeshiva became a whole different organism. And so I was thinking about a lot today, and I remember I used to tell people about Rav Lichtenstein and Rav Avital. Rav Aaron challenged us to be angels. There's no other way to say it. If I'm tired, I can't let myself be tired because Rav Aaron never got tired. If I'm hungry, I can't let myself be hungry. Never get hungry. If I'm not learning up to spar, then I feel guilty because I feel his shadow looking at me. Because basically in every area of human endeavor, try to supersede yourself. Try to transcend your human limits. And then Rav Avital reminded us that sometimes you just have to be humans. And it's an incredible combination in life. I would say most people in your generation, my sense is, I don't want to sound patronizing, I'd say most people in your generation, I think, but correct me if I'm wrong, are not as driven enough. They're more comfortable, they're more complacent, they've been told how great they are, they've been acknowledged and validated, validation, ratification, and that lowers drive and aspiration and goals and striving and forcing yourself beyond your limits and pushing yourself beyond. Then there are people who do push themselves beyond their limits and they push themselves into despair and fatigue and exhaustion and depression. And it's so important to have those two pistons in your life. You have to leave a driven life. You have to leave a life of striving and yearning and working and not accepting who you are and trying to find someone else and holding yourself accountable. But you don't have to have that voice. Just forgive yourself. Allow yourself. And I wish I could tell you, there's no mathematical formula for how these two voices operate, but you have to have both of them. There has to be some stereo in your heart. Has to be some, not stereo, but different voices that are playing. Has to be some melody. Because if these two voices aren't playing, you'll either fall into absolute mediocrity or absolute despair. And to find that happy middle where you live a driven life, but you're comfortable emotionally and psychologically, you need two voices. And we'll try to give you both of their voices. But Rav Avital's voice was clearly grounding, and you're human, and accept your humanity, and don't be afraid to embrace it. Okay, stop here. I think you have sicha now, right, Mr. Shmuz? You know who's giving it tonight?
Right.
Okay, so it's only that one. Is it here or somewhere else?
Yes, right here. Okay.